Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the Pixel Drone Show, the podcast where we talk to industry professionals about how they use their drones. Your host today is Kara Murphy, Haya Kestelo, and myself, Greg Reverdio. And if you're new to the show, make sure that you subscribe and get notifications for all the new shows that we do every single Tuesday. Today, our guest is Beth Flippo. She's the Chief Technology Officer for Drone Express, a Telegrid Technologies company. Beth leads the Drone Express package delivery division, and she also oversees the program that we will talk about, which is called the AeroGrid Plus, the drone swarm technology. And Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So before we dive into the details of all the cool things that you guys do at Drone Express, can you tell us a little bit more about how you get involved with drones in the first place?
Absolutely. So Telegrid was founded in 1984. It was founded by my parents. I've been with the company now about 15 years, and we've always been a communications company. So we are a manufacturer. We develop radios, wireless mesh networks, always for the military, the highest level of encryption. I personally wrote a lot of those encryption engines, and we developed a mesh network for sensors that a drone company reached out a few years ago and said, hey, could we get that on our drone? So we said, we don't see why not. So we had to learn a lot about drones and telemetry and video and how to get the data off. And we ended up with a mesh network that was custom for drones that worked specifically with this flight controller. And we thought this was going to be the greatest thing. The military is going to love this. And we put it on our webpage. And instead of the military, we got a huge commercial response from people like you who were like, this is really great. What the mesh network did, the AeroGrid mesh network, is it allows the drones to talk to multiple drones in the air and multiple pilots on the ground. And very few people have that. So we decided, you know, most of the people calling us were about package delivery. We said, you know, maybe we'll go out and, you know, make our own drone and do this. And that's how we got into creating Drone Express.
I was going to ask you, like, can you tell us a little bit more about how you guys got started with Drone Express and a little about the early days of Drone Express, if you will?
Sure. So as a defense contractor, we knew that we had to get certification or, you know, there was no product. So we went right to the FAA as soon as we could. And in doing so, we secured a spot as being one of 10 companies in the entire U.S. that is pre-certified almost for an airworthiness certificate by the FAA. It's not the certification yet. No one has achieved a certificate for an unmanned aircraft, but it puts us in very good company with Amazon and Zipline and some other incredible drone manufacturers. And that is the same certificate that a Boeing 747 gets. We are also getting a Part 135, which is an operations certificate, and that is what American Airlines would get. It's a domestic air carrier license. So we're working very closely with the FAA with everything that we do. And we also knew that we're not an R&D type company. We needed a customer. And we looked at primarily groceries, because that seemed to be the trend, and looking for a grocery company that had a lot of stores in very dense population. So Kroger immediately popped off the map as having, you know, a lot of people. They're right in the neighborhoods. They're right, you know, if you have a drone that can't fly very far, their store is right where the action is. So we reached out to them. We've been working with them now for about a year.
And we'll be talking more about the drone delivery at one point as well. I have a lot of questions about, you know, the partnership with Kroger as well. But Kara, you had a question.
Can you dive deeper into AeroGrid? What does it entail? And what would you say is the benefit of a drone swarm mesh network?
So the benefit of it is when the FAA says they want visual line of sight of the aircraft, it's not just that they yes, they want you to have eyes on it, but they also want to make sure you have contact with that drone at all times. And what a mesh network does is if one pilot loses line of sight for any reason, another pilot can also have control of the aircraft at the same time. It can also allow other drones in the sky to talk to each other. So if one drone is doing a delivery and comes into some kind of obstacle, or there is something that the other drones should be aware of, it can share that information without having to go down to the ground and having that information pushed back up. They can talk with each other and say, avoid this area. This area had a lot of radio interference, or I had a lot of wind in this area, go a different path. These are things that if you don't have the drones being able to communicate with each other through a mesh, what you have traditionally is point-to-point communications, which is one pilot talks to one drone. And if you want to have another pilot take over, that original pilot has to relinquish control. And by doing so, there's a couple of moments where the drone might not have a parent. And for people who work in telecom like us and our RF people, we know that what that possibility could mean. So a mesh eliminates that. Mesh is like a network you have in your house. Everything is always connected. We have people monitoring aircraft remotely, but yet the communication is still local. We're still operating in a local frequency band. We're not using cellular networks. So that's a big benefit of mesh.
So I guess this might get a little technical, perhaps. But how do you control the handover, and like how do you decide which pilot has priority over flying that same drone when you have multiple pilots potentially flying that same drone at the same time?
So you have priority. So there can only be one that is actually, like, you're correct, controlling the aircraft, and they do that by communicating with each other first. So the pilots are always in control. They always talk to each other. There's an open channel of communication between them. And they say, I'm taking control of this aircraft. And they do a countdown and it's passed over. And at that point, the original pilot is no longer part of the picture. The pilot is the person that is now in control of the aircraft. And this has actually been the way unmanned communications has been done since like the 50s. It's always been in a handoff kind of fashion. So it's following that same technology.
Yep. That's what we did. As a flight instructor, I used to fly instruct, and we'd say, I have the controls. And then the other person says, you have the controls. And then you say again, I have the controls. It's very, very standard. I want to talk about the drones. Let's talk about the hardware and kind of what are the specs of the drones that you're using to do these deliveries?
So in order to get a type certificate on your aircraft, the FAA has to have full access to every single piece or component that's on that aircraft, even down to the carbon fiber, even the glue that you might use somewhere has to be provided to the FAA. And what they do, just like they do with a normal manned aircraft, is they tear it apart. They say, we don't like this gauge wiring. We don't like this part. We don't like this. And eventually you end up really rebuilding your aircraft to be much safer and to withstand the elements, things that you wouldn't have thought of that the FAA already knows are things you should take into consideration. One big part of it is that your supply chain, your suppliers have to agree that if anything changes on a component that they're providing you, they have to notify you ahead of time and allow you to make changes. Chinese manufacturers are not going to sign any sort of agreement like that. So in our case, we cut our own carbon fiber. Anything we can't do internally, we've used suppliers that are U.S. suppliers because we are able to establish those, agreements. And also they have something like that's called ISO or AS9100 quality assurance, which makes sure that anything coming to you has been tested and approved, even though you have to do your own once you get it. It's another layer of protection. And while it sounds incredibly difficult to have gone through this for our aircraft, it's made us build a better drone. And there's a reason why manned aircraft is so safe. And the reason is because all of them have had to go through this with the FAA and learn from what has happened previously.
Yeah, this is a question we get from our customers or listeners a lot is, you know, how come I can't fly my drone over people, but this manned aircraft here can fly over cities and everything? And what you just said is the answer to that question is that everything has been approved and tested. And is there also a maintenance requirement, I'm guessing, on the side of drones as well, just like there is on the manned aircraft sides?
There's scheduled maintenance, you know, periodic maintenance. All of this has to be planned. All of your, you know, how you do your maintenance. And not only do they do this review on the mechanical design and these maintenance procedures, but they also, you're required to fly hours on your aircraft. You know, where our first set is going to be at 1100 flight hours. So you can imagine all the things that you can encounter flying an aircraft for 1100 hours. So it's the combination of the design, the actual proof of concept, and the actual manufacturing with the suppliers that produces a really safe aircraft. And that's really the difference. And that's why you would trust an aircraft that's been certified by the FAA over one you just bought on a shelf at Costco.
Are there any technological innovations you've seen in the industry recently that have excited you, piqued your interest, that you think will improve your operations?
We've seen a lot of improvement. I think what everybody's waiting for is proof that there's a commercial use for these aircraft, that you can make serious money with them. One thing, obviously, energy, where we're really looking forward to, you know, people looking up new batteries, new ways to charge faster, landing pads that are, you know, much more user friendly. We are also looking for quieter props. We're hoping that becomes an industry when so that our drones are not generally really that noisy, but these are things that are going to come out as we move forward. So we're excited to see what's out there.
Interesting that you mentioned the noise levels, because I know from the wing delivery drones, they have smaller props and they make quite an annoying buzzing sound. And it's something that Google mentioned that people had actually said that was annoying to listen to. My question for you now is a multi-part question, basically. I mean, with drones becoming more autonomous as we go on into the future, what is the current job description for a drone delivery pilot, and how might that change going forward? I mean, are pilots becoming irrelevant at some point because drones will fly themselves, or how do you see that?
I see pilots moving into more of an air traffic control situation, because even if the drone is flying autonomously, there are always going to be things that come up. Right now, that person has to be on the ground with an RC in his hand and with his fingers on those sticks in case. As we move to fully autonomous, that person doesn't have to be on location, but he will probably be in a traffic control center, probably a regional center, where he will be able to take control of the aircraft if birds start swarming or something comes up or he needs to land for any reason. So I don't see the pilots going away. I see them being more of a remote operation in the future. But these, you know, it's same way with manned aircraft. You know, there should be a voice, there should be somebody that's able to, you know, give guidance. And in this case, it's control the aircraft.
What kind of training are you currently providing to your pilots in addition to the Part 107 training? Is there a requirement under Part 135 as well to provide a specific type of training?
There is. So we don't have a Part 135 yet. We're working on it, but the training procedures are the biggest part. That's the biggest hurdle in the Part 135. You even have to have a drug and alcohol program for your pilots. It's the same as manned aircraft. You have to make sure they're trained, that they are constantly, you know, using their skills, you know, on a schedulized, you know, way of making sure that they are never get tired or don't know a new aircraft. So that is the biggest part of the Part 135 for sure.
What's the status on your application for Part 135 certificate?
So I can't get into all the details of where we are. We are part of the Beyond program with the FAA, and in doing so, our lead participant is the Choctaw Nation, and we are getting our Part 135 through that program and working very closely with them. They've been a tremendous partner. They're in Oklahoma, and it's really incredible what they've done there in for drones. It's a great partnership.
And just a quick follow-up question, is flying beyond visual line of sight still an issue if you do have your Part 135 when you do get it? Is that going to be something?
It's all part of, you know, testing and seeing what your aircraft can do. And if you're going to be doing beyond visual line of sight, the concern is identifying manned aircraft. Really, it's just to a medevac helicopter can pick up from anywhere. Are your radar systems or your onboard sensors fast enough to not only detect that that aircraft is there, but maneuver away in time? This has not been demonstrated to the FAA's, you know, preference at this point. They really have not seen anything that is operating the way it should. So that's why you aren't able to fly beyond visual line of sight. There are two ways. You can either use ground-based radar to detect manned aircraft, or you can use an onboard sensor system. And we're hoping to test both to try to see if we can get one that would be able to detect and avoid in the time that the FAA approves. But it's all part of testing and what everybody's trying to get to.
Can we go back a few years and talk about the FAA's original integration pilot program? And I understand that Drone Express was part of that as well. Can you tell us a little bit about what you guys were doing and what the goal was?
So the IPP was the Beyond took over for the IPP, and it was the same format, really. It was, you know, you had lead participants, and then you had the companies that would join under those lead participants. And it was about communicating with other groups and trying to do testing and things like that. The Beyond takes it one step further, because the Beyond adds the element of, you know, trying to achieve beyond visual line of sight, whereas the IPP was more focused on just really learning and testing flying drones at all in the NAS. So.
And the Beyond program, so this is currently going on right now. I know the FAA is working on different types of beyond visual line of sight. I'm assuming that you guys are involved with the long distance beyond visual line of sight. Is there anything you can share? Probably not, with what is going on right now with Beyond.
I don't really have a lot of insight into that, of how far they've gotten with that. I don't really have a good answer for that. I don't know what other people are doing.
It's all good.
Sorry.
All right. Can we shift gears a little bit and go to drone deliveries? I understand that last May you guys partnered with Kroger, the grocery store, to start doing drone deliveries. Can you tell us a little bit about where this project is, how many deliveries have been made, and just kind of, yeah, the background of that?
So we started July 4th weekend. We've done hundreds of deliveries. The community has welcomed this with open arms. We have had no complaints. They're so excited about being a part of this type of technology. We don't go very far. We only go a mile, a radius around the store. The biggest complaint is a lot of people are outside that mile that want to use drone package delivery. But it's shown itself to be incredibly fast. And that's been the most remarkable thing is, you know, we stay outside the store and we say within 15 minutes, your items will be delivered to you. And really, we've stuck by that. We've really gotten really close to that. And there's nothing out there that can do that, especially in such an eco-friendly way. There's no guilt, there's no tipping. It's really been even better than we could have expected to do this pilot program. And we're still out there now.
So can you walk us through the process of a drone delivery from the moment the order is placed to when the final product is delivered and arrives at its destination?
Sure. So the orders are placed with the customer. We do not get in between the Kroger or any of our customers and their end customer. The order gets picked by their people and is run out to us, and we're in the parking lot. You're on the side of the building. The box is placed on the drone, and it is flown out to somebody's home, and then the drone comes back. It's really, we have people out at the location right now in order to maintain that visual line of sight. So we don't just have the pilot at the store. We have the handoff to the pilot that is right in front of the home or on the street. And that way we are constantly within regulations and making sure that this is done safely. So a lot of people think like, oh, well, why do we have to have that person there? And it's proven necessary. We, you know, people are learning what it means to have a drone, you know, come, you know, in proximity. We're able to make sure there's no dogs or people are, you know, right underneath or anything like that. It's been very good to have those people, but it is a group effort still to perform drone delivery.
So does the drone actually land in that location, or are you able to drop the package from underneath the drone?
We drop the package. We don't land or get anywhere near the population.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Interesting. So why groceries in particular?
Groceries seem to have around the clock schedule, which is nice. So if you were doing fast food, a lot of them are usually bunched up like in either lunchtime or in the evening. Groceries are something that people order throughout the day. And that's where drones really, because it's hard to compete against a person in a car delivering pizza when they're getting paid because they're getting so many orders in an hour. If drones can't do that many deliveries, it's better to space it out through the day. And groceries have shown a lot of people, most people forget one thing at the store. Most people just need one thing to complete a recipe that they have. There's a lot of things that are delivered from the grocery store. And in Kroger's case, a lot of it, the store, the marketplace we're at has even more than just groceries. They have household goods and everything that, you know, even a larger store would have. So that's why we decided to work in that space.
Is there a specific weight limit? Maybe you mentioned it. I don't think so.
So we only carry up to 5 pounds. And really, because we're not trying to stress the aircraft. We're trying to see if there's a need, if people like this, what it's like to, you know, have end customers get feedback. So we're really not pushing the weight at this point. And even if we wanted to deliver more, we could do multiple trips because it's an eco product. It doesn't cost as much as sending. You could send 2 drones and it's still nowhere near what it costs in gas. So that's not something we're looking to really push to carry more at this point.
So once grocery deliveries by drone become more routine and you guys feel that you're comfortable doing that, like, what would be next? Are you guys looking to do COVID test kits or organs or blood samples like some of the other companies are supplying by drone?
We have stayed away from the medical space. We have specifically, we're looking at retail goods. So we have not looked into any of that. We are in discussions about construction. Apparently construction materials, a whole job site can shut down for a couple of small items that broke or were missing or a tool that's needed. And apparently there's a very big need to get those things to people quickly. And I mean, we all work, you know, on our homes. At one point you have to get up, get all cleaned up to get to Home Depot to get that one thing. So there might be a very good use case there, which we think will be our next step.
Yes, please. Home Depot deliveries.
You're under please, the sink and you're all dirty. Like, you do not want to get out.
We need a hammer.
How many trips I've made to Home Depot to get one thing, one screw or something. That would be, to me, that's even better than groceries delivery, quite frankly. So yeah, what do you think is the biggest challenge right now for Drone Express and maybe even drone delivery companies in general? What's the biggest hurdle?
The biggest hurdle is, I'm trying to think of what really, I mean, obviously we, like everybody else, we'd like to be able to have more autonomous delivery. But I believe in the baby steps. I do think this is something that you have to take small steps. You can't jump into. Flying over densely populated areas is going to be a long time away. That's also because not so much the population density, but because of the restricted airspace near airports. So I think drone delivery is really going to follow Walmart's original model and go through the Midwest before, you know, and Middle America before it goes into major cities. I think we're going to see a lot of that. So that's probably a big obstacle we'd like to, you know, eventually overcome and get into those populated areas.
Speaking of obstacles, do you see public acceptance of drones as a potential hurdle?
It used to be. When we first started doing this, we heard from all these people, you know, not in my neighborhood, oh my goodness, you know. But COVID changed everything. COVID, it's like a switch went off. Everybody, they want eco-friendly delivery. They want contactless delivery. They're done figuring out how to tip people. Apparently, people are getting in fights with their delivery people in their driveways. Everything changed. Nobody cares about the drones anymore. They don't care about the noise. They don't care about privacy. That was a big thing. People were like, oh, you're going to be recording me. We've heard nothing of that anymore. They're like, this is a way to get goods delivered without putting another truck on the street that their kids are riding their bikes on. This is a way to, you know, have it not impact the environment. Because even if they got out and went on their own, even if it's not a delivery, even if you just picked up and drove to a store, you're still using gas. So people are really, I mean, it's incredible just in this year and a half how everyone seems to be on board with this and wants these autonomous. And you see it in Tesla too. You see people using autonomous vehicles and having the car drive itself, whereas years ago people would be like, that could never happen. You know, Teslas are driving people around now, and it's following that same philosophy into drones. So we're happy for that.
Yeah, and I've written about some of this extensively for InnerDrone when I was writing for them. You know, there is a lot of talk around the economic and environmental benefits of using drones, as you just touched upon. Is there actually any solid proof out there that drone deliveries are more environmentally friendly? Anything we could look at just to see the solid proof?
You know, I can bring up some stuff. I mean, just other mm-hmm. than it just being an electric option, it's and it has a benefit. I will try to look up some data for you, but there is a benefit of mm-hmm. drones over electric vehicles for delivery. So electric vehicles have to charge at some point. Drones don't have that problem. Drones, you swap the battery. So there's mm-hmm. no downtime with that. Yeah. Whereas other autonomous vehicles, there's no way to do that. So mm-hmm. That's another benefit that we think that, you know, our aircraft is going to provide. But I will get you more information okay. on exactly those eco benefits.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that'd be interesting to look at.
Yeah.
So my question for you is that if you look at different or other drone delivery companies out there, not even just in the US, but just globally, which one do you think is like the furthest ahead, or which one do you look up to in terms of what they're able to do?
For drone companies?
Drone delivery companies.
Yeah. Google is doing incredible things in Australia. I mean, I think they said like 100,000 deliveries or something. They're really doing incredible things there. And also Zipline. Zipline is a great company. I mean, they're doing things in Africa. They are a fixed wing aircraft, so they're looking to do warehouse to warehouse. But they have really they've built a really safe system. They're also one of the 10 companies working with the FAA for a type certificate. So yeah, I definitely look up to those two groups.
I want to switch gears and I want to talk about remote ID and a few other topics, but do you see remote ID as a necessity for the type of operations that you guys do?
I believe it. You will have to have remote ID. I've always been a proponent. I know the hobbyists it hurts the hobbyists to have to do that remote ID. But I think it's necessary just as much as a transponder is on a manned aircraft. Unmanned should have the same restrictions. You should know everywhere manned aircraft are operating. And I think remote ID is a great thing. And I think it's definitely going to make the skies safer to know everywhere. Manned aircraft will know where unmanned are, and unmanned, you know, knows where manned are. It's got to go both ways. So I am a big proponent of that.
So as a follow-up, you know, a lot of talks in the industry, and myself included, we are not so excited about other people knowing the location of the pilot. Are you guys worried about what I'm going to call sky pirates that have the ability to track a drone in flight and figure out it's a delivery drone and then go and collect, you know, their loot at the end of the flight? Is this something that you guys are actively working on?
It's not something that I've been concerned about. That's why our encryption is so important. We have a FIPS 140-2, which is a military grade encryption. We only use military grade ciphers, and you have to authenticate also into the aircraft. So it is, you know, those type of measures I think are more important. So even if somebody knew where your aircraft was, they can't control it. And if they decided to do something, you know, nefarious, like try to shoot it down, this is a federally registered aircraft. Damaging it in flight is the same, you know, punishment as if you tried to take shots at a manned aircraft. So that really hasn't been a concern. I think it's actually a little safer for the cargo also, because we can drop it in somebody's backyard. So we'll hopefully eliminate a lot of the porch pirates. But I haven't really thought of somebody trying to, you know, do something with the cargo in flight or following it to where it's going. But, you know, anything's possible. It's amazing what hackers, what lengths they will go to. So I don't know. I hope it's not something we have to worry about in the near future.
I agree with you that especially among hobbyist drone pilots, people are not very enthusiastic about the whole idea of remote ID. With the FAA coming up with these regulations, but not being an enforcement agency themselves, do you think that compliance is going to be an issue if nobody's going to be following up with pilots and making sure that they actually use remote ID?
I think their biggest concern originally is not going to be the hobbyists. It's going to be companies like ours, where we have multiple aircraft in the air and it has to be type certified. It has to have remote ID on there. So I think that's going to be the majority of the population that is using that the FAA will regulate. But yeah, as far as individuals, you know, scouting towers or doing something, I don't know. I don't know how they would regulate it to make sure that they're using it, other than if there's an incident, which unfortunately is a lot of the ways that the FAA does regulate. If something happens and people say, I didn't know that drone, why didn't I know that drone was there, it's going to be an after effect for not having it.
With so many different use cases for drones, right? I mean, if you look at bigger companies like Amazon, Wing, Walmart, you guys as well, and you look at, for instance, FPV pilots, I mean, should the FAA not come up with different rules or different remote ID systems for different use cases of drones, do you think?
I think it's just like baby stepping. The first step is let's just get everybody to tell us where they are. And then eventually, yeah, you'll be able to identify just like you do now. You can, you know, identify an aircraft and see a real picture of it, what's flying above your head. If you have an ADS-B receiver, you can know exactly what type of aircraft that is. You'll probably have that same thing with drones, and you'll be able to see our DE-2020 is the model number and know exactly what type of drone that is.
So we've seen a resurgence of local government trying to control airspace in certain areas. We've even seen an effort out of Texas and Utah to try to create corridors for drone operation. What are your thoughts on this? Is government overstepping?
The national airspace is a federally regulated airspace. Unfortunately, you do see a lot of states, even cities. I've seen some individual cities decide drones are not allowed in my city. Unfortunately, they have no jurisdiction. There is a reason why this is federally regulated, and it's not something that they're going to be able to put rules in place. And even if they did, I'm sure the FAA and the Department of Transportation would have a big issue with that, and they would probably fight for their right to control that airspace. Saying that you can't fly a drone here or there is the same as if you were trying to say you can't fly a helicopter here or there. You would never hear anybody say such a thing. And really, it's because they believe not just that it's manned, but that aircraft has been certified and is safe, and it's not just going to fall out of the sky one day. Drones are getting there. Once these drones become type certified, I feel that the states and the cities are going to get less restrictive because they're going to feel they're safe, just like they feel a helicopter is safe today. So I'm hoping that as this progresses, that you'll see that change. But for right now, with anybody just flying a drone anywhere, you can understand their, you know, fear. But I believe very strongly that this should be regulated at the federal level.
Mm-hmm. Instead of the local, I agree, because it gets confusing then.
It does. It absolutely does. Yeah, and you can know why, because you know you're crossing state lines, you're crossing cities. It's almost impossible to be able to maintain something done at that kind of level.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the good news is that at your level at the moment, because you're not landing anywhere, you can theoretically fly over even areas where takeoff and landing operations are restricted, like parks and things like that. I'm guessing, you know, eventually you could get a delivery done in a park. You're waiting in a park, you want something delivered, you can get it done there.
We don't deliver to parks. We only deliver to private property, but we have had some people who really wanted to try it put in the address of a park. We've had to drive out there and be like, I know you're excited about this, but we can't deliver to this area.
Eventually you could, right? Though you put a GPS coordinate and deliver to a GPS coordinate.
Right. And that's the benefit of drones too. Cars, delivery vans have multiple packages. They can't deliver to a GPS location because they have to develop routing algorithm, the routing plan before they even get in the vehicle. Drones deliver one package at a time. You can, you know, find that person's sitting on the beach and they ordered a beach towel, and you can go right to it and drop it off right next to them. Eventually you'll be able to chase these people down, and that'll be interesting to see as you're like driving down the highway and it says, you know, pull off at this exit, and your drone will, you know, eventually it'll talk to your car, pop your trunk, put it in, you keep going. So yeah, I've got a lot of visions of where this is going to head, but, yeah, for sure. It is going to go to at least where your phone is. In 2 years, probably maybe even 1 year, we're going to laugh about how we used to have to put in our address of where something should get delivered to. I mean, we're walking around with a giant locator on us, and we still are attached to our house. So if I buy something that I need that night for my kids' play, I have to deliver it to my house, go back home and get it, turn around and go back to whatever I'm doing. I don't know how we're still doing that. It should have changed a long time ago. I think drones are going to be the first to change that. And then you're going to see ground vehicles trying to do the same thing, because people are going to want it delivered to wherever they are. What, you know, you're at a friend's house. How many times have we said, what's the address here? You know, it's that you shouldn't have to do anymore.
Yep. So I have a bit of a loaded question. It's not that bad, but the FAA has a bit of an issue looking like the bad guy because they're putting regulation in place. At the same time, we often hear from our customers and from people from comments that we see online that a lot of regulation and restrictions are created because of Amazon read drone delivery. But Amazon seems to be getting the blame for pretty much everything. because they want to take over the airspace for themselves and nobody else flying. Now, this is conspiracy theory stuff, but this is the things that we hear, right? Okay. So what do you think drone delivery companies can do to help educate the general public on how they operate and how this can be beneficial and the fact that they're not trying to take over the airspace? I think there's room for improvement and there is room for education.
So you're saying to educate the FAA about this?
No, to help educate the general public so that perception, I mean, it's a feeling, you know, it's a perception from the general public. So how do we change that?
You know, I think the best thing is just to keep going out there and doing it. A lot of people, unless you live in Centerville, Ohio, where we're doing our deliveries, you've never seen an aircraft like this. You've never even had the opportunity to you know, see it in flight and get it near you. So I think as more of these programs and pilot programs roll out, you're going to see a lot more acceptance and you're going to see a lot more people excited about it and wanting it in their neighborhood. And that's going to drive a lot of this because stores want to make their customers happy. So they're going to go wherever those customers want. And I think you're going to see once people experience it, that demand is going to, you know, drive people away from thinking that Amazon's trying to take over the skies. But I am a big fan of the FAA. I think what they're doing is trying to take all the safety measures that they've had for manned aircraft. I mean, you look at our airspace, it's unbelievable how safe manned aircraft are. I mean, they always say it's more dangerous on your way to the airport than to be in an airplane. And they're just trying to take those same safety measures and apply them to these unmanned aircraft. And I personally haven't encountered anything yet that I thought was over the top or in any way trying to just keep drones out. I believe they want drones in. They just have created such a safe environment already. They want to make sure it stays that way. So I really believe in what they're doing, and I hope the population trusts them, which I think they do. I think if you or I heard that the FAA certified that aircraft and you knew that there were no accidents, you'd also start thinking, you know, this isn't so bad. This is actually, I trust the FAA, what they're doing. So I hope that changes things once you see these certifications come out.
I kind of want to circle back a little bit to remote ID. One of the things currently in how the rules would work for remote ID is that the location of the pilots would actually become public information. Now, of course, when you're flying expensive drones, that's a concern right there. But do you think, it's especially for women, that it might even pose an additional risk when your location, if it's a remote one, is being made public?
I personally don't think so. You know, I'm afraid all the time. I am a runner. I'm afraid all the time of just, even without being tracked, being somewhere that's remote or somewhere people can't hear me. So, you know, I think women think about that all the time of their location, whether somebody's broadcasting it or not. But so I don't really fear somebody, you know, coming over and trying to attack somebody to get the aircraft or, you know, they might come over to bug them and ask them some questions. You might have a lot of looky-loos coming out and being like, oh, you're flying near me. But I would hope not that it wouldn't be used as a way to stalk or hurt anybody. So that's the first. You guys are better on your conspiracy theories than I am. I've got to come up to date on all this stuff. Now I'm scared.
Well, those are things to consider, right? I mean, especially what you just mentioned as well. If people come up just because they're interested and they want to talk to you, but meanwhile you're flying a drone, I mean, you could argue that might even make the drone operation itself less safe when you have a distracted pilot. So I know from talking with other people that the pilot location becoming public information is a concern for many.
Yeah, but I think the only reason it's in there is that if something has gone wrong, that pilot is the only one that can gain control back of that aircraft, unless there's some remote connectivity to it. So if you do have a drone that's, you know, let's say somebody is using it for nefarious reasons and spying on somebody, you should be able to contact the FAA and say, where's the guy who's flying this thing? Because he's really the drone. So I guess there's both sides of the coin you can play on that one.
Do you think it would be better if that location was only made available to law enforcement instead of it being public?
That could be. If law enforcement were able to mobilize and get that, then possibly, yeah. But I think it there's positives and negatives to both.
So there's been only, I guess, when we talk about what percentage of women make up the drone industry, it's kind of stagnated. The figure's been between 5% and 6% for the past 5 or 6 years. Do you think there's anything we could be doing to encourage more women to get involved in the drone industry?
So I think it's all of aviation. You don't see a lot of women. It's not just specific to drones. But I found that we have a lot of women on our team. Mm-hmm. One of our lead pilots is a female also. And really, it's just exposure. It's just showing students when they're in high school what this is and showing that there's a job they could do with this. Women are very practical, I think, in a way. And if they look at a drone and don't see a career or some way to make money off it, they look at it more as like, this is a hobby. Mm-hmm. Women aren't as much into their hobbies as they are into growing something to eventually make money and do something with. I'm sorry if I'm generalizing this. That's usually the way I've looked at things. So I think you're going to see more, just like you see a lot more pilots now becoming that are women for manned aircraft. You're seeing more pilots in that space. And I think once drones show these women, you can have a career, you can do this, you could eventually go to be the air traffic control, you could be a regional manager. I think you'll see a lot more women take it seriously as opposed to being, you know, kind of something they could just do for fun. So I'm hoping that encourages them. That's going to be a big push of mine, obviously, is to encourage women in this field. And I'm going to do everything I can to hire as many pilots and go to as many schools and try to get, you know, we pride ourselves on the diversity of our pilots because mm-hmm. 107, I mean, it's a great equalizer. You don't have to go to college for 4 years to be a drone pilot. You don't have to jump a lot of hurdles. You can come from all walks of life, from any career you used to have. If you can get a drone and fly it, now there's a possibility to have a real career with it. So I love that about that, is that you don't have to have, you know, a whole bunch of things on your resume to do this. You could just be really good at flying and got your 107, and now you have a whole new career path. And how many things can you really say that about nowadays? So, I really hope to be good at encouraging women to join this field. All minorities, we're trying to make this a great job for anybody from any background.
Are you part of Women in Drones or Women Who Drone at all? Do you take any interest in those organizations?
I follow a lot of them. Just, you know, personally incredibly busy trying to run this company. So I haven't had a chance to really get involved. I should take that away as something I should try to be more involved in those groups. I feel like I would want to try to be more of the women that haven't even gotten into drones yet. There's so many young girls who've never even seen these. They come and they see the drone behind, you know, Kroger and, you know, they get all excited about it. So I'm trying to get more into that younger group.
Outstanding. Well, we're getting towards the end of the show. I have one more question, which we ask of every single one of our guests, which is, what is your favorite drone to fly?
Can I say our drone? Because it really is. We had tremendous drone designers when we you know, to build this aircraft. And when our drone is hovering, I mean, you could throw a rock at it. It is so still. It is tuned so well. We have people that come from flying little DJIs and are still able to fly our, you know, 4 foot wide aircraft. So yeah, I'm a little biased. So I'm going to say that that's my favorite.
Nothing wrong with that. Well, Beth, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come on the show. It was definitely a pleasure talking to you about all of this. I think this is an area where we get a lot of questions, people asking questions about drone delivery. So I hope we can answer some of those questions by watching this show. For everyone out there, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And then if you want more information about Drone Express, you can go on their website. It's droneexpress.ai. And in there, you'll see everything that they've done. There's actually a timeline of everything that they've done, which is really interesting because you've been doing this for a long time. So if you enjoy the show, make sure that you subscribe, make sure that you go and share on social media. We air a new show every single Tuesday on the various platforms for podcasts and also on YouTube. So thank you, everyone. And then we'll see you next week. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.